Hello, my fine friends. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler, joined as ever with Mr. Stoker.
Hey, Stuart, how are you?
I'm good. I am going to try to go through this whole episode without saying your first name. So just as a homage and an ironic twist to you, because you use my first name way too often in other people. You're one of these guys that just drops the first name in all the time. I think you read a masterclass book at one point that said, hey, this is the magic word. You have to say people's first name. So what do you think, Mr. Stoker, about that?
Well, you know, it'll be interesting to see if you can do it. You're going to find out that the way I speak is much more natural than what you're attempting to do here, Stuart.
There you go. I'm also going to jot down, let's play a game at home. It's a drinking game, maybe. I don't know. But at home, every time he says my name, you can take a shot of apple juice or your favorite libation.
So now we have competing interests, right? Because you're going to try to avoid saying my name, and I'm just going to I'm going to get our listeners just hammered throughout the episode.
There you go. It'll probably make the show much more enjoyable. But for you, the one person listening, Adam's mom, welcome back to the show. We're glad you're here. Today's going to be a very special episode for a couple of reasons. One, it's going to be fully dedicated to Stu's news. There's some news in the industry that is really not in the industry. It's in the world. It's just shaken up the zeitgeist like not many things have done before. So we're going to talk about that today. But also, we said we'd do it last week, Adam, and I finally acquiesced. And we're going to debut your song, the jingle, for the greatest segment in all of destination marketing. Are you ready? Are you going to cue it up?
Because I'm
going to build it up. And we're going to right now, world premiere. No one's ever heard this before other than the two of us, but this is the jingle Adam's been waiting for. I've finally given in. I'm going to let him play it. This is the jingle for the greatest segment in all of entertainment, Stu's News.
This could be the best day of my life. We'll see. There it is. Was that the Trump dance?
It was.
Just gotta let it marinate. This may be the best.
Are we gonna play this whole thing? Really?
Well, the question is, how many times should we play it? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Is one
once
enough?
And only once ever? Like, I don't think it's a recurring
once per episode.
Piece to you.
Once per episode.
Well, certainly not more than once per episode. Where did the whole Interstellar cruise thing come? Did you tell it like background or what? Like, I'm trying to figure out where this space thing came in.
I went to this new, well, it's not new anymore, but at the time it was new, technology called Udio that was an AI music generating AI product. And I just put in, Stuart is a huge fan of Star Wars. And so I need like a Star Wars type theme. And I want you to really build up and romanticize this Stu's News segment as the greatest segment in all of tourism. And this is what it came up with on the second try. And I heard it and I was
I'd hate to hear the first try.
Yeah, well, it wasn't ridiculous enough. So have you ever seen those memes right now that are on social media where you're like, I want more. I want more.
Yeah, make it more ridiculous. Yeah.
And on version two, it got it. It nailed it. And yeah, that was at this point almost, probably 6 months ago that I did
it.
It's
been a while. Well, I mean, you try to get people, the community behind it. But, you know, when we only have your mom listening to the show, it's hard to get like 100 people to like a comment on LinkedIn, right? But
yep, she pushed the button enough times, but LinkedIn figured her out, and so I had to find another way.
She got booted. Well, tell us what the to all you folks listening or watching, like, tell us what do you think? Was it worth the wait, or is Adam like, just he should stick to his day job? What do we think? I loved it.
And I do want everyone to know that if you vote to keep it, I will clip the video of Stuart hearing the jingle and dancing the Trump dance.
Donald Trump dance.
And I will distribute that clip as far as I possibly can if you guys vote to keep the jingle.
Yeah. This is really Send me up a failure. And I realized I think I used your name a minute ago. So I think I already failed in my endeavor today. But that's okay. We can keep trying, right? All right. You've left me somewhat perplexed with this whole nonsense. Let's jump into the show. Let's talk about what we came here to talk about. This is Stu's News.
Oh, fine.
Unless you are living under a rock, you must have heard the news about DeepSeek, this AI LLM from China that has just taken the world by storm. It is all over the news. It has had massive impacts on the stock market. If you look at Nvidia's stock, I mean, it took billions off of their market cap. Everyone is rambling about it. So, Adam, put you on the spot. Tell the audience at home what's such a big deal about this DeepSeek, and why are people so interested in it?
Yeah, and maybe just to give some background for those that may have been under a rock, I'm going to give a little bit more context, and that's the fact that the AI tools that we've seen emerge over the course of the last couple of years have largely been American companies that have built the technology and products that have come out. So ChatGPT, Claude, Grok, all of the different AI tools, Gemini by Google, they've been built by American companies. And while there's been a lot of competition out there, Americans have kind of had the confidence that they're going to be leading the charge in AI. And I think the stock market has reflected that, where the what they're calling the Magnificent Seven, the seven stocks that have really kind of driven the stock market's success over the last couple of years, especially coming out of COVID. They've been driven by many of the tech companies who are the leaders in AI technology. And I think what happened yesterday was a true wake-up call on several different levels, because China released, and a Chinese company, but also I'm sure that the Chinese government, allegedly, I guess I have to say that to protect myself, has ownership in that technology. And it's called DeepSeek, and it is very competitive with these American products that we've been using. With one exception, it's completely open source, which allows everybody to access it for free. So now these revenue models that have generated billions of dollars in revenue are clearly under some sort of a threat, which is why so much market cap was lost on some of these AI-centric companies yesterday. And it's interesting. I'm not sure if I'm ready to say if this was a market overreaction. I think that we can talk about some of the components of this that I believe could indicate that there's an overreaction in the market. But I think, regardless, it's no longer just accepted that American companies are going to be the only players in this game. There's going to be a distribution of success from other countries getting involved and other companies getting involved. And I think we're in the middle of a really big arms race, and it's going to be interesting to see how it all turns out.
Yeah, and so a couple of additional points, because it's funny because you're looking at it from the American-centric narrative, right? Which I think is a valid one, right? But I'm also looking at it from a implications of AI in general. And so I think there's two things that are claimed that have not been substantiated, but well, three really that are massively impactful. One is, whereas OpenAI's GPT and some others have cost billions and billions of dollars on the training piece of the model, they claim, DeepSeek claims they did it for tens of millions, right? So magnitudes, orders of magnitudes cheaper to actually get this. From a timing perspective, these American models all took years to develop. This took a couple of months, right? And so ultimately, from a cost perspective, is significantly cheaper. And one of the reasons is that the chipset they're using, keep in mind, America has blocked some of the most advanced Nvidia chips from reaching China. They're not allowed to export to China. So this is being built on older architecture, like a generation older chipset from Nvidia. And so the amount of compute that is being used to do this, they've had to be really scrappy. They've had to be really innovative. And, I was watching an interview earlier with the CEO of Perplexity, and he was talking about, this necessity being the mother of invention. And because they were forced to have these constraints, they've had to get a lot more creative. And it's allowed them to do things that people just didn't think were possible. They thought were bottlenecks that just aren't. You know, they were self-imposed bottlenecks. And so what we're looking at is literally like the amount of I forget the actual measure, but it's like, let's say it's a million n number of inferences or something like that. I forget what the metric was, but it was the cost to do that with OpenAI currently with GPT-4o was about $4 and something. To do it with DeepSeek, it's about 10 cents, right? So when we're on the verge of really, you know, a lot of smart people are talking about the bottleneck of power, you know, actual energy power being a problem, and how China's really been ahead of that game in terms of launching a lot of nuclear power plants and even coal plants, and their cost per gigawatt hour of energy is significantly lower than the US. And we know that ultimately compute is going to be the battleground, but that relies on power. Well, this has just dropped the need for power by, you know, 10, 20, 30 times. And so it's massive, and it competes. You know, they've done it on a shoestring budget, relatively. They've done it in limited time with limited resources, and yet it competes and often outperforms these other models. So I'm looking at less from a, is it America or China leading the way, and more from a democratization of AI that is now going to be accessible to people at a fraction of the cost in a more real way. So what I think is happening, and the biggest story, although obviously there's concerns, geopolitical concerns, I think for me, this has accelerated the AI revolution probably years in a matter of weeks. So that's what where my head is with this conversation.
Well, and I think one of the things that you said that's really important going, and I'm going to continue a little bit with the angle that I did, just because what it did to the markets yesterday, I think it's fascinating. But Nvidia, who you mentioned, has really been the kind of pick and shovel provider to the AI industry. So all of the tools, the servers, the chips, and all of the different things that people need to really succeed in AI, Nvidia has had somewhat of a monopoly on that. And that's why over the last 2 years, if you just had bought Nvidia stock like 4 years ago, you would have, I think, tripled your money or something like that. I'd have to go back and look at what the exact amount is. And then the reason they lost a ton of market cap yesterday is because it is very, very clear that they are no longer the only provider, or you don't necessarily need Nvidia in equipment in order to be able to accomplish what DeepSeek just accomplished. And so I don't know. I think it's going to be really interesting to see. I think now a market competition always drives prices to come down. Right. And Nvidia has had the luxury of kind of just being the de facto market leader. And now their prices are going to have to come down, all of which indicates this is very good for the consumer.
I think so. I mean, you know, it, as I mentioned, it accelerates things, it democratizes things, it makes AI open to people. We're going to be able to do more things than we thought we could at a lower cost and more rapidly. But there's also increased risk, you know, and I think we've got to really think about the ethics. Next week, I'm going to be talking at the DI Marcom Summit about the ethics of AI. And, you know, so we're not probably going to talk about this specifically, but one of the things for the developers of AI is, you know, the human side of things. How do we protect humanity from the potential risks of AI? And I think, you know, when we're in a country that maybe doesn't have the restrictions that America does, you know, self-imposed in some cases, but legislative in others, in the fact they've done this so quickly, it does accelerate the risk side of AI as well. So we've really got to be cautious at the same time as being excited and optimistic about the potential for what this could mean for humanity. So
I think DI should be evaluating the risk of having you on stage more than the risk of what could happen with AI.
Well, you know what? They mitigated the risk because Jeanette Rouse is going to be on the stage with me. So I think she everyone would you know, everyone would say that she is a risk mitigator in terms of knowing her stuff when it comes to AI, more certainly more than I do. So
I feel much
we're
better about
excited.
that now.
Yeah. That's funny. But what so let's make this sort of tangible in terms of what should DMOs be thinking about? You know, this is obviously a seismic shift in the landscape. I think I would relate this to dating myself a little bit, but if we go back to the early days of search engines, right? There was a battle going on back then. Google wasn't always the only winner of search engines, right? Back in the day, we had Lycos and InfoSeek and Ask Jeeves and Yahoo, and Google came later. Late Google wasn't one of the first ones, and it was like there was a real battle there. And then Bing came along as well. So it took a few years for that to shuffle out, and there was a fragility to their dominance because the cost of switching platform from a search engine was almost zero. Like all I need to do is type a different URL or change my bookmark, and now I'm using a different search engine. There was no inherent cost for me to switch platforms. In AI, somewhat like that today, right? Right now, I can use ChatGPT, but I can flip over to Gemini or another LLM and do the same things. And you know, maybe there's a conversation or two that I've had that's a long ongoing conversation with GPT that I maybe lose, but I could easily port over. But for the most part, my cost of switching platform is close to zero right now. But that's not going to be the case for long, because with the onset of agentic AI, where agents that we control are going to be able to do tasks for us, we're going to get more connected with our AI tools of choice, and it's going to be a harder cost to switch, right? So I think now is the time where we're all going to jump around a little bit. But a year from now, 2 years from now, we're probably going to be caught up in a walled garden. Just like right now, if I'm an iPhone user, I'm probably not switching to Android or vice versa, right? It's hard to switch. Not that people don't do it, but the majority stick with their thing. I don't think we're there yet, but I think 2 years from now we will be there. And so now these players are shifting, and there's a lot of speculation about how the decisions that Sam Altman and OpenAI are making, and the mass exodus of talent out over there, and the lawsuits, that even though ChatGPT has the brand and has had this sort of has been the poster child for AI and is certainly led in terms of usage, it's probably not going to be the ultimate winner in this arms race that you call it. And now this new Chinese LLM has come out, I think that's even more likely to be the outcome, that ChatGPT does not win. So for DMOs, what should we be doing? Should we be jumping over to DeepSeek? Should we be sticking with what we know? What's your take on that?
Well, I think we need to start broad and kind of go a little bit narrow. By the way, can you hear the vacuum in the background?
I cannot.
Okay. All right, good. So I think we need to start broad and then narrow in from there. The first point that you made that I think is really good for us to all be aware of is this is very much similar to the browser wars of the early 2000s, right? And I think we all were able to get search results, but there's two costs to using the to choosing the wrong winner, right? So cost number one to choosing the wrong winner is, like you said, you get pretty embedded and it becomes much more difficult to switch. And then you end up with like a long period of time of using the tool that's not the best, and you get farther and farther from being on the front lines, right?
Is
Or
a
being.
compound negative interest on that. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, the opportunity cost gets bigger and bigger. But the other side of that too is by not picking or by Stuart, I lost my. There it is. There, I said your name. I lost my train of thought on the second one, and I was really proud of it too. I thought it was a really good point, but I've
Well, you know,
totally lost
age happens to all of us,
it.
Adam. If I had a dollar for every time I forgot my train of thought.
But I'll come back to that. So
What
when I'm
was that
talking,
saying? It was a joke. You didn't let me get to the fun time.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
But when we're talking about destinations, I think it's really important right now that we try multiple tools. Because this is the piece that I was going to get to, is when Google became the leader, the search results on Google became more and more relevant and more efficient. So basically the users that made it to Google early were more efficient than the users who migrated late to Google. And I think we're in a very similar situation where it's too early to pick a winner, and DeepSeek just proved that, right? Like all of us, I think, at different times have thought, okay, ChatGPT is who I'm going to roll with. And even in our organization over the last 3 weeks, there's been a major conversation about how Claude and Gemini have improved so much that they've overtaken the value of ChatGPT. And so there's a lot of migration happening in our organization. So for DMOs, I think right now the most important thing is even though it's uncomfortable, and I actually think this is a great exercise for the DMO industry in general, but even though it's uncomfortable, you need to continuously try new things and not just accept if there's a news article that says, or a friend that says, ChatGPT is the best thing out there, not just trust that because you get the opportunity cost of using the one that's not going to end up in the lead or end up being the most efficient. But then you also are not going to be using the tool that's best for your organization. And that's why everybody's got to be trying stuff right now. And I think a clear winner or two or three winners will emerge probably within the next 24 months. But I would say for the next 24 months, all of us need to be testers, triers, pilots, and be comfortable using new products and technology to see what's going to be the best fit for us.
Yeah, and I think that's it, right? It's the behavior that matters right now. It's the exercise of practice. It's trying and experimenting. I think I've always been a big fan of whether it's the 80-20 rule or the 90-10 rule, you pick where you're comfortable, but 10 to 20% of your time should always be spent experimenting and trying new things, and you know, whether that be in your marketing campaigns, whether that be in your personal life, you should get comfortable being a little bit uncomfortable, right? I actually tell my guys here in the office, because we're always trying to push the envelope, the team here at Visit Model Beach, I always tell them, I want you to be 60% comfortable and 40% uncomfortable on a good day. On when I'm feeling particularly sassy, I'll flip it and I'll say, I want you to be 60% uncomfortable and 40% comfortable. And so if we're really trying to push, and so I think we've got to get comfortable being uncomfortable. I think we've got to continue to try new things. But if you spend 80% of the time, say you've used ChatGPT and you love it, 80% of the tasks you do, spend doing that in GPT because you know it and it's efficient, it's effective, and it's going to save you time. But spend that other 10 to 20% trying Perplexity. You know, if you want to go and do something that's real time, like if you wanted to go research DeepSeek right now, ChatGPT is not the tool for you. Perplexity or Gemini probably are the tools for you, or Claude are probably the tools for you, right? So spend that 10, 20% of your time trying these new things. Don't go all in on any one of these tools, because you've got a better than or a less than 50-50 chance that you're going to be on the winning side of that, right? There's at least half a dozen very competitive tools right now that are all marginally similar, and they keep leapfrogging each other. And if you jump all in on one of those right now, and you put your blinkers on and you don't look beyond, you're going to be likely obsolete unless you're very lucky, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of go back again to search engines. If we go back to history repeating itself, you know, every one of those search engines for the first, you know, and this is sort of mid 90s up until like 2000, early 2000s, every one of them would add these new features all the time. It's like when Ask Jeeves came out, it was like, hey, you're talking to a person. It's more like a question. And so they're always adding these new features, and they're all iterative improvements, right? But it wasn't until Google came out with PageRank and they started using inbound or links as the sort of proxy for quality. And then we started getting the best results by a mile, right? Because everyone was so focused on the UI of the search engine, and trying to get the right results, but they were getting the results through semantics, understanding the content, the meaning of the content. What Google did, which was revolutionary, and no one could catch up with them once they did, was they introduced PageRank, which was, let's look at the number of links that are linking to your website. Let's equate those to some form of vote. And let's say if someone else has more votes themselves, they have more weight. So it created this sort of self-improving algorithm to bubble good content to the top of the search engines. And so immediately overnight, everyone saw, if I want the best, most relevant results to me, Google's going to have those. And for 20 years, no one could touch Google in that, right? Bing would sort of copy some things they did along the way. But Google went from 10% to 20% up to like 85% market share in search.
Yeah.
Because they did it really better than anyone else. And no one could catch them. Right now, we're not at that point. There's no leader in the pack in AI. There's no one has the killer app that no one else has. There's marginal differences between them. Some might be better at math problems. Some might be better at coding. Some might be better at inference, you know, but none of them is a out and out winner right now. So it's way too soon to back a horse at this point.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I think is interesting about this whole exercise is AI could actually be the vehicle to solve one of the major issues that we've talked about in the destination marketing industry. And we talked about how this is a love letter to the industry. We want to help the industry move forward. This AI actually exposes complacency more than almost any other product because it's moving so fast. And if you want to make sure that you're not complacent in every facet of your role, AI is the exercise that might help you get there and change your habits in every facet of your job. Because as you're trying new AI tools and to try to stay on top of what's moving you forward the most, you're also going to start to recognize the same thought process in your digital marketing channels that you're using, or the, you know, the different media that you're buying in, or whatever it is. And I don't want to pivot this all the way into a marketing conversation, but I believe that AI could be the solution for some of the complacency that I think has been exposed in the destination marketing industry over the last couple of years. And like you said, if you're not uncomfortable 40% of the time, or in a week when Stuart's really feeling it 60% of the time, then you actually probably are not fulfilling the level that you need to be successful in your role. And so let's start with AI. Let's just try a few different tools. Let's test and see what works and doesn't work. And then you'll probably see the mindset that's created within you as you're testing all these different things start to apply to all the different facets of your job and make you better at your job in your role and likely get a promotion, more opportunities. I just think
maybe even an appearance on this show if you're really lucky.
Well, let's not get crazy. I mean, this is the epitome.
One can dream, right? One country.
Yeah, for sure. I just think that this is an exercise that can benefit anyone in the industry. Start testing and trying different AI tools, and you'll see that it's a path to success in a variety of different parts of your job, not just with AI.
Yeah, not just your job, your personal life too, right? I mean, it can add, it's an additive multiplier for everything. Now, I'm going to push back a little bit on a couple of things you said, because I don't know that I've met too many folks in the industry that are use the word complacent. I don't know if I like that word, because it sort of has a hidden meaning there, that it's almost like a deliberate thing. And I don't know that it is, because I think there's an inertia in the industry, right? A reluctant, a risk aversion, let's say.
Fair.
That's inherent in the industry. And we've talked about this a little bit in the show before, right? There has to be a risk aversion because of the precarious nature of our funding. We know that we have stakeholders. We've talked to Will Seckham about that in an early episode about the mistakes, the risk, why DMOs don't take risks, I think was the name of the episode. And so I think inevitably we as an industry are incentivized towards inertia, to continuing the status quo, not disrupting, not doing too much. Now, occasionally a troublemaker or two will come in the industry, right? And they'll disrupt. But I think you're right. And rather than using the word exposing people, I think what this will do is it will filter out the types of folks that are going to continue to be successful in the industry. And the folks that are continued to be successful and the ones that will remain relevant and the DMOs that will remain relevant and even maybe remain in existence, because I've said before, I think AI is an existential threat to DMOs. And this is one of the ways it is. I think if we want to stay relevant, we've got to embrace this technology and we've got to do it faster than we historically have. If we look at every other technology that's come through, whether it be digital in general, right, when the internet came along, whether it be mobile, whether it be now AI, we've always been the last to the dance, always, as a destination, as an industry. The destination marketing organizations are behind. They're behind e-commerce. Right? E-commerce have transactions going on all the time. So they can iterate and improve, and they're incentivized in real time with relevant metrics that they can optimize towards. Even the hotel industry, because they're controlling the transaction, they can see real-time results for their efforts. DMOs have a lack of that because they don't really control the transaction. It's hard to measure the transaction. It's hard to measure causality, as we had that conversation with Zeke Coleman about causation versus correlation. And so I'm not saying this to blame anyone, right? I don't think it's any one person or cultural fault. I think it's inherent in our industry that we're risk averse, that we are slow to the dance when it comes to innovation. But that has to has to change. We have to have a rallying cry from the DIs of the world, from every major organization that is advocating on behalf of the destination marketing organization, that this is the dance we cannot show up late to. Because if we do, we will not exist 10 years from now. We will not exist. We'll be irrelevant. So we have to, this now is the time. And it's going to take Jeanette Rauch talks about this a lot. It's AI is both a top-down approach and a bottom-up approach.
Yeah.
You can't just have one of those, right? The team that are doing the work have to embrace it. The leadership at the top of the organization, including the board, have to embrace it. I talked to a DMO recently, last week, where their employees are not allowed to use generative AI. It's banned for all their employees. They're experimenting with it. Their IT guy is experimenting with it.
Is this a DMO in Russia? Where is it?
It's in the US, and I'm not going to name names, but it's a sizable DMO.
Wow.
But it's like, you're not allowing your team to use a tool that makes them more effective and more efficient in 2025. That's bonkers to me. You know, that's the mindset that's going to kill the DMO.
Well, and that's where I wanted to, you were pushing back on my comment about complacency. And I actually really agree with what you said. You defined it as more of a risk aversion. But what's interesting is it's actually an industry that incentivizes trading short-term risk for long-term risk. Because what, and AI is going to really exacerbate this, because those destinations who refuse to even allow their people to use generative AI in 5 years are going to be way behind. And somebody's going to come in and say, you're not letting your team use generative AI, you're fired, we're revamping this whole thing. And I think that's really what is going to happen in the industry if we continue to look at everything on a short-term basis and not look at the long-term implications of what we're doing. And of course, I'm getting a little bit back into the New Year's resolution episode that we talked about, where everybody needs to be gradually getting better and better and better. And if you just stay complacent, because that's where your incentives are, and that there's actually de-incentive for innovation and risk-taking, the problem is, by not pushing against the incentives, the long-term risk is you will lose at some point. It's just a question of how long before you do, if you stay complacent. So I don't think it's intentional complacency. I think it happens because of the way incentives are and the political atmosphere surrounding the destination marketing industry. But I still think there's equal long-term risk to not making changes or trying new things or testing new things. It's a delayed, inevitable result.
Yeah. So people asked me when I came into the industry, and had a slightly different approach, and maybe didn't toe the party line in terms of what a DMO should do and what has historically been the role of the DMO. Right. And I got called things like troublemaker in the industry, and people would ask me, it's like, why are you doing it this way? Or what are you doing this? What's the purpose of this? And I said, I came in here with a very cavalier attitude, and it's partly my DNA, but it was partly, you know, an approach that had worked for me before in my agency world. But I said, I think if the DMO continues on its current trajectory, it's going to be irrelevant. I get fired, right? I'm going to try to disrupt the industry and disrupt our DMO so that we're really successful. Worst case scenario is I fail and I get fired. In the timeline of that, doesn't matter, right? Because it's either I get fired because I try things that people don't like and I get fired, or I try things and they don't work and I get fired. But either way, if we continue on the path, I get fired, right? So I hope that doesn't happen. It hasn't happened yet. But if I try and I'm successful, then I keep my job in Myrtle Beach as a community benefits from that. And so I think we've got to have a few more risk takers in the industry. We have some, but I think we've all got to have a little more courage and confidence in what we're doing. You know, I think one of the things I've learned is, you know, there are DMOs out there that want to do things differently, but they're scared. They're scared of the repercussions. But it's okay to take that risk, but you have to do the work. You have to understand those risks, and you have to say, okay, let's get the board on board first. Let's educate them. Like, if I'm thinking about I want to do this new initiative, let's talk to them about why at a very grassroots level. Like, let's give them credit. I hate it when people say things like the board doesn't understand that stuff, or it's too intellectual for them, or it's above their head. And the same for elected officials, right? If you can't just explain something at a level that the audience understands, then you don't understand what you're doing enough, right? You've got to be able to break it down into the simplest terms and articulate the value proposition to the audience. If you can't do that, you haven't thought about it enough. So I think I would love to see people have more courage to take the risks and do it in a way that mitigates the risk where you can, but knowing that there are inevitably risks. Because there's not a doubt, we need to do an episode on this, Adam. We need to do an episode on the existential threat of DMOs, and are they going to be irrelevant in the near future? You know, so
well,
I think you're already
I
working
love,
on that potentially,
yeah, I
right?
was going to say, I love that you brought that up, because I have a guest coming on in the next couple of weeks that was the topic she specifically wanted to discuss,
Awesome.
and I'm really excited to talk through it.
That's great. So stay tuned for that, because I really, it sounds really dramatic to say it's an existential threat, but I do believe it. You know, I think, are we as relevant today as we've always been? I mean, some are, some are not, right? But I think will we be more relevant or less relevant next year or the year after? I think the chances being less relevant because of AI, they've dramatically gone up, right? So
Well, 2 years
we've got to
ago,
react.
yeah, 2 years ago, the idea that you were going to be able to have what we're referring to as agentic AI that can actually perform tasks for you automatically without you needing to intervene or approve, that seemed as dramatic as what we're saying right now. The world is going to continue to accelerate in progress, especially as it pertains to technology because of AI. And it means that the gap between those who are taking risks and attempting new things and trying something different, and those that choose to not allow their teams to use generative AI to, sorry to keep calling out the Destin, you've blown my mind with that example. That gap is going to widen faster than it ever has. And that's why it's so important that right now everybody should be testers, triers, pilots. Because you cannot allow that gap to get so significant that you can't keep up. We talked about this on an episode before, that what AI did was level the playing field. Even people who had been in their career for 30 years were on a level playing field with people graduating from high school or even in high school, and they can learn at the same pace because of AI. And those that don't embrace it, try it, use it, incorporate it, the gap is going to widen, and at some point, it's going to be difficult to close that gap again.
Yeah, I'll give an example today how we used it in a situation that is an equalizer for all people, right? So imagine you're starting a new initiative. In this case, we started planning for a campaign that's going to begin in 2027. So in 2027, Myrtle Beach is going to be celebrating 100 years of golf. Our first golf course was built in 1927, the
I'm
Granddaddy,
in,
Pine
by the way.
Lakes, right?
I want to
And
be
so
there for that.
we're going to do some spectacular. We're going to have a massive bunch of stuff, a birthday party, if you will, for golf in the Grand Strand in the Myrtle Beach area, the golf capital of the world, by the way. But we brought some stakeholders together, and we had our first kickoff meeting, and we stuck an AI recorder in the middle, and we had our conversation. And while we're doing that, usually you'd have someone taking precarious or a lot of notes, right? We'd have be taking tons of notes, and then someone would have to organize all that, and then someone would have to regurgitate that back. We don't need to do any of that anymore. Like, I'd put a few comments into ChatGPT. We were recording the conversation, and immediately after the meeting, we say, summarize the notes, give us the plan, give us the action, right? And it's not perfect, but it's like 80% of the way, you
Yeah.
know? And before, I would have had to hire a $10,000 a day consultant or something to come in and coordinate that meeting and then produce this published piece or whatever, right? So I think consultants' jobs just got a whole lot easier, but the competition just got a whole lot harder for them too. So we talked about this last week. I think AI raises the floor way more than it raises the ceiling. It does raise the ceiling, but I think what it does is it brings the floor a lot closer to that now elevated ceiling.
Yeah. Totally agree. I think it's a great example.
Yeah. Well, you were talking about before we started recording, you were talking about an example that you saw with someone using DeepSeek earlier today for coding, like doing some content stuff. You want to share that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I didn't get a chance to finish the video, so I'm excited to see how it turned out. But there was a guy who was using DeepSeek to build a self-perpetuating content studio for the topic that he was an expert in. And by creating a prompt of the different types of content he wanted to create, not only was he able to build the content framework and philosophy that he wanted it building within, but then he said, I want SEO content, I want blog content, I want email content. And it wasn't just like ChatGPT, you would expect to get back all these different types of content in the format that you're looking for. DeepSeek would go deploy the SEO content on the site automatically. It would deploy the email campaign automatically. And again, I didn't get a chance to fully finish that video, but this is the level of automation that we're looking at, that if we're not progressing or thinking in our jobs, some of the stuff that we do that's relatively mindless will get replaced. And if that's 90% of your job, we got big problems at some point. And I think that's coming.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. So I'm a recovering coder. When I started my career as a developer, and so I occasionally will dabble in little projects here and there. And I used to make little agents to do things, and now it's so easy. A couple of weeks ago, I was playing around just on my spare time as a hobby, and I wanted to see how easy it would be to create an automated X account, Twitter account, that talked about a subject that I'm passionate about, the Nintendo Switch 2. So, like, I'm a huge Nintendo nerd. You can see my Nintendo Lego stuff over here in the corner, if those are watching. But it's fascinating about the new Nintendo Switch is coming out, and there's so much interesting news, and it was hard for me to gather it. But I also wanted to dabble with being a content producer, creator on X as well. So, in literally, it took me about 40 minutes. I used Perplexity to set up an automated thing in Perplexity to scour the internet for the latest news and rumors and stuff on Switch 2. And then I use ChatGPT to take that information and summarize it into tweets. And then I used, I forget what it was, like Make AI, or it was another tool that basically put that, it was the agent stuff, it put that stuff together and automatically put out a tweet. And so
No
within
way.
40 minutes, I had a Twitter account that was on a regular basis, however often I wanted to, would find the latest Nintendo Switch 2 news and push it out on Twitter. And it 45 minutes, you know? It's
That's
crazy.
incredible.
Yeah. And so the things that are possible today, the scalability of what we can do today. So the idea of doing content, you could easily do that. Like, I'm thinking now, how do I do this with Myrtle Beach? Like, could I tr create these bots or virtual people that are talking positivity about Myrtle Beach on a constant basis? It wouldn't be hard to do. You just got to d decide on the business logic and the rules. But we can do things today that were not possible 12 months ago. It's crazy.
It's crazy. And you juxtapose that with you're thinking about, can I create automated agents promoting Myrtle Beach? And there's another destination saying, we're not allowing anybody to touch this. And
Yeah.
that's the gap that we're talking about, right? That's going to happen.
Yeah. And I don't know. If I was a betting man, I'd say there's more people on that latter side. I think there's more people on the we really dabble, not either not using it or cautiously dipping our toe into it than the people on the other side. There's very few that are really pushing the envelope, you know? And
Yeah.
so
And
it's
if you try AI and take a chance, I mean, you could end up with incredible assets like this, right?
think you just
I
killed
mean,
the show.
this is invaluable. Okay.
This
All
is
right. I won't play the whole
do,
thing.
yeah, thanks. Are we going to put a link to that in the show notes so if people want to listen to it in their spare time, they can.
I will try to figure that out. Yes.
Or you put it up on Spotify, and we can start getting residuals. This show can start paying us, you know?
Now we're talking. Now we're
Yeah.
talking.
Yeah. Well,
I couldn't help it. I couldn't help it.
I think you just killed the episode. You may have killed the show completely, but I think we've done a relatively adequate job for us of talking around DeepSeek and maybe demystifying a little bit of it. I think for me, big takeaways are don't get too caught up in the hype cycle about this being a Chinese company and all this stuff. I think just let's focus on we're going to continue to see these breakthroughs at an increased rate. What was taking 6 or 12 months is now going to happen in weeks. And so we're going to continue to see big
Yeah.
breakthroughs in AI over the next 6, 12, 24 months. And we've got to stay ahead of it. We've got to be informed. We've got to be active. We've got to practice our behaviors to make sure that we're ready and we're agile and that we're whatever comes around the corner, because none of us can really predict. If AGI really happens soon, which some people say is 10 years away, and it's been 10 years away for the last 20 years. Some people say it could happen tomorrow, right? So if AGI happens, I mean, we've all got to rethink our lives, but it's better to be informed and involved and active than it is to be passive and keep your head in the sand.
Yeah.
So if we want to be relevant, if we want DMOs to survive, if we want the industry to survive, we've got to embrace this. There's no question.
The
Do you have
final
any
thing I,
takeaways?
yeah, just the final thing I want to say, we didn't really address the fact that there's a lot of people who are scared that it's developed by the Chinese government or
Yeah.
the, there's the, it's kind of the boogeyman of the day, right? Is the
Yeah.
Chinese. And I would say that there's always going to be excuses or reasons not to use it. And I can guarantee you that your competition is going to use it, is going to try it, and is going to get farther ahead faster. I'm not saying go all in on DeepSeek at all. I'm saying try it. And if you're worried about getting private data uploaded to DeepSeek, okay, well, don't do a prompt about your bank account, right? But I would say for the most part, let's try it and test it and see how it works compared to other stuff so that we can stay on par with what our competition is doing.
Yeah, and you've probably already given the Chinese government everything through TikTok anyway. So, what, I mean, what else
That's
are
a
they going to
good
learn?
point. That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always going to be fear mongering around stuff like that. I think, and in the end of the day, if you're not comfortable, like you do you. If you're not comfortable using DeepSeek, don't use it, right? But be active in other AI, right? DeepSeek is. The chance of DeepSeek being the ultimate winner are the same as OpenAI's ChatGPT, right? It's less than 50%. It's probably less than 5% at this point. We just don't know. But you should be informed. You should be aware. You should be active. You should be practicing all this stuff because there's going to be another DeepSeek and another OpenAI tomorrow and the next day and the next day. And you just knowing what they are and what the value proposition is and how you can use it and how it can benefit your work and your life and your community. That's what's important right now. It's not the brand. And that's a whole nother conversation we could have gotten into. OpenAI's
Yep.
success is in large part not being because it's been the superior product to date. It was early on, but since then it's really gotten through on brand recognition. That's that it won the brand war.
Yep.
So we'll see what influence that has 6, 12 months from now, So, and thank you for joining me again. Always a pleasure.
Always a good time, Stuart.
You may want to go back to drawing board on the jingle, but I appreciate it. I probably said your name at least twice in this episode. I think you probably said mine like 72 times, so you win. But if they want to get hold of you, Adam, where can they do that?
Adam at thebrandrevolt.com or find me on Tourism IQ.
Great. And you can find me at stuart.butler@visitmuddlebeach.com is my email, or you can hit me up on LinkedIn or Tourism IQ. And until next time, this has been Destination Discourse. What you couldn't
Yeah.
see is when I did my Trump dance, is I was also doing my Elon dance, and my midriff was showing at the bottom,
Now that we needed video of for sure.
No, you really didn't.